Welcome everyone to this interview where I'm super excited to be talking with Jodie Cohen. Firstly, Jodie, welcome and thank you for joining me.
Oh my God, always a pleasure.
So I'm looking forward to see this interview because we're going to get into the area of the vagus nerve, which is a really powerful and important way of understanding how trauma is interconnected between our mind, our emotions, the what happens to us, and our physiological body. And Jodie has a very powerful story of a trauma that she's been through. And I think it's a really helpful way of bringing to life what can otherwise be perhaps quite a dry and quite a dense area. Just to give people Jodie's background, Jodie Sternhoff-Cohen is a best-selling author, award-winning journalist, functional practitioner, and founder of Vibrant Blue Oils, where she has combined her training in nutritional therapy and aromatherapy to create unique proprietary blends of organic and wildcrafted essential oils. She's helped over 70,000 clients heal from brain-related challenges, including anxiety, insomnia, and autoimmunity. Her website is visited by over 500,000 natural health seekers every year, and she's rapidly become a top resource for essential oils education on the internet today. Her first book, Healing with Essential Oils, is available on Amazon.com, and her new book, Essential Oils to Boost the Brain and Heal the Body, was released earlier this year. Jodie, I'd love just to start a little bit with some of your own story. I know that you were already working in this field in different ways and then went through a horrific personal tragedy. Tell us a little bit about that and really how that impacted you and evolved your understanding of trauma.
Yeah, I think like every wounded healer, my life had basically been a roller coaster where the bottom would fall out. I'd kind of figure out how to get back up and then the bottom would fall out again. So I started the company in 2012 after my then husband attempted suicide and was moved to a residential treatment facility. And the moment I knew he was safe and it wasn't my job to keep him alive, I finally fell apart. And nothing really helped because I had been so high stress that my gut was so inflamed that nothing I was ingesting was actually making it into my system. At which point I started playing with oils because they enter the body through the olfactory system or they can get in through the skin. And that worked really well. So I made some things up, healed myself, put them out in the world. And then when this shoe dropped in August 27th of 2018, my 12-year-old son and three of his friends were going to go whitewater rafting. They never made it there. There was a car accident on the way. My son died instantly, and two of his friends later passed from injuries sustained. One boy survived. And talk about the bottom falling out. You know, I used to always say that everything was okay as long as my kids were okay. And so what do I do suddenly when one is not okay? And the other one is looking at me and saying, you know, I need you, because her father was the driver. He ultimately is serving time for some bad choices on that day. And so I had this interesting intersection of trauma, overwhelm, and a very clear why on how I needed to find a way through. The challenge was I had no clue what to do. You know, the grief model that's so commonly pointed to is really, I later learned, designed for your own death, for dealing with your own death. And it's pretty much like you can be angry, you can blame, you can be depressed. The only positive one is acceptance. And I'm like, well, that's not very uplifting. So I know that's my best shot. So I just realized like, okay, what's out there isn't really doing it for me. I need to make up my own stuff. And truthfully, I wish I had found you then. I just kind of kept trialing and erroring it. Like, let's try this. You know, the first night people forced me to take pharmaceutical sleeping pills, which I knew in my heart, I'm not a good fit for pharmaceutical drugs because I am a slow methylator, which means they stay in my system too long and make me feel horrid. But, you know, I listened to people and I woke up the next day and thought, I'm never doing that again. Like, that was a very bad choice. I'm just going to start trusting myself a bit more. And so I made a very detailed journal. Every night before I went to bed, I would kind of review the day backwards because then things popped out more. Like it was really obvious, you know, walking my dog with that friend who's an amazing cheerleader, that was a good choice. I'm going to see more of her, you know, going to grief therapy where people who 20 years out are kind of worse than I am right now, that didn't feel very nurturing. That felt kind of slimy. So I just kept kind of trialing and airing it and keeping the things that worked and letting go of what didn't, including certain people in my life. And at the end of about 8 months, it became pretty clear. There was a clear pattern of what was working. And so then I started looking at why was this working?
I think there's something really important in what you're saying here. And actually, you and I touched on it before we started recording, that there's something about just knowing what you need in any one given moment. And yes, sometimes it's the obvious things like therapy or emotional processing. But sometimes the thing that we most need is to give ourselves permission to numb out for a while, that those things that we might do to distract or avoid are not always wrong.
Yeah, I did a lot of coloring and a lot of puzzles. Puzzles were incredibly therapeutic. I don't know why. I think it's because it's almost meditative. Like it's a way that you can, for the type A personality, you're still achieving something, but you're also kind of relaxing.
And so puzzles helped. What else helped in that early, those early months of just the trying to metabolize and make sense at that point, but just trying to survive the shock of that early trauma. What else helped you at that point?
Yeah, it was really, my best friend is a therapist and, you know, this happened the week before school started. She left her three kids who were all starting high school, got on the next plane and got there within hours and basically said, all you need to do is sleep, eat, and move. That is all you need to do. You know, and I work with oils for sleep. I know how to sleep, which is why it was so silly that I took the pharmaceutical drugs. So I just focused on that. You know, I'm going to sleep. Eating was very hard. We can talk about the vagus nerve and the parasympathetic state and how that helped it. And then movement. I have dogs, you know, I walk them anyway. And there was something really unbelievably cathartic. Whenever I felt like I was going to explode, I would just go outside and walk and move. And that helped for a number of reasons. You know, I do live in a pretty place. So outside was nature. But even just moving through things, breathing through things, that really seemed to help process things, shift energy, clear energy.
And dogs are a great normalizer, aren't they?
They're
not interested in whatever else is happening. They want to be fed and they want to go for a walk.
I know. Although my dog was very close to my son, it was very interesting. I kind of felt like he was traumatized too. He kept looking for him.
Wow.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about, let's kind of sidestep for a moment and just talk about some of the physiology here. So what is the vagus nerve? Why is it important in trauma?
Yeah, it's really the safety gauge. So it's kind of the first thing in the body that responds to any sense of danger. And, you know, obviously trauma is danger. And your body's designed to keep you alive. So your autonomic nervous system controls all of your automatic functions, your heart rate, your breathing, your digestion, your detoxification, your immune system. And if there's danger, you know, like the proverbial lion chasing you, or suddenly, you know, your world as you know it has been blown up because someone died unexpectedly, it allocates resources differently. It allocates resources to prioritize survival. So it pumps, it routes blood flow away from your core, your digestion and detoxification, to your arms and your limbs. It actually changes your eyesight. It makes your pupils, the black part of your eyes, get bigger so that you can take in light differently. And it's called selective attention. So if you think you're going to die, you are not contemplating the universe. You are just focusing on how do I fight back or how do I flee, fight or flight. And that really shuts down your access to cognitive, your higher problem solving skills. Like if you've ever felt threatened or even, you know, in the aftermath of this, there were attorneys calling you and attorneys like to do this thing where they paint the worst case scenario and then give you this very black or white choice. And you're in such fear and overwhelm that often people make choices that, you know, when they calm down, they can see differently. So I knew about, and interestingly, the vagus nerve is the on-off switch between fight or flight, you know, response and rest and digest parasympathetic response. So I knew enough to know like, oh, my heart feels like it's going to explode out of my chest. I feel so overwhelmed. I feel panicked. Wow. I'm in the sympathetic state of the nervous system. Okay. Let's pause everything. Like there were a couple lawsuits after this, obviously, because there were other children involved. And there were certain attorneys who wanted my business. And one of them called, my dad actually died 6 months after my son. So I was sitting with my dad in hospice and this attorney is calling and I shut down. I was like, oh my God, I can't do this right now. I'm like, I hung up on the person. I didn't even say goodbye. I just hung up. And, you know, my dad is sitting there and I kind of said what I wanted to say to my dad. And then I, you know, it was my childhood home. So I knew it well. I'm like, I need to take a walk. I just need to walk. And I use an essential oil to stimulate the vagus nerve right here. I was pretty much bathing myself in it, but I could feel the point where my heart rate slowed down and I could suddenly see like, oh, wait a minute. This attorney is painting this as like black or white, but there's more information that I need to get. And there are more choices and, oh, this friend might know that. And, oh, I can research that. Wow. And suddenly all these solutions appeared and I realized, wow.
That's the when difference you're of changing state, right?
Yes. Yes. And suddenly, like, you know, if you have options, then it's much more hopeful and uplifting because it's not just, you know, doom and gloom. It's like, well, maybe it's doom and gloom, but we don't know yet. You know, it could also be this, it could be this. And the irony, I look back on what that individual said to me on that day, which was, you know, you're going to go bankrupt, you're going to lose everything. And the way this all unfolded, and it was, you know, it obviously wasn't fun, but no one went bankrupt, no one lost everything, everyone kind of, how do I say this? You know, no one's ever happy when death occurs prematurely. Like no one was ever okay with that aspect of it, but the way that, financially and legally it kind of played out. I think people feel like that, you know, that went okay.
Okay. And you were able to identify and recognize, it sounds like what you needed, like having the awareness of, I can see my body's in fight or flight. I can see that my vagus nerve is out of balance. That then allowed you to start to make choices to address that, to bring things back into balance.
Yeah. It's basically the pivot.
Right.
It's when you feel overwhelmed and triggered, being able to say like, oh, look at this. I'm, you know, like I joke with my daughter now because she's a teenager and she's completely age appropriate. I'm like, I'm putting myself in timeout. I go walk the dog. Like, you know, there used to be that joke of you can't have a tug of war if you don't pick up the rope.
Right.
I can now see like, oh, this is what's going on. I'm stepping out. And I walk the dog, I reset. And it goes from being like triggered and reactive to being easier. Like, okay, I'm not choosing to have a fight with you. I'm just going to listen to what you have to say,
yes.
You know, validate you. And if you want suggestions, I'll offer them. But if not, we can just, you know, you'll figure it out.
And to recognize your own state in that interaction,
yes.
Right? To be able to go, I'm not in a place right now that I'm going to make good choices, or I'm even going to see the choices I have available to me. So actually, yeah. my mission right now is not to deal with this situation. My mission is to get myself in a place that I'm then able to deal with the situation.
Exactly. Because it's far easier to put yourself in timeout and reset and show up in your best, you know, as your best self, as opposed to saying something that you later regret.
Yeah.
Or, you know, expanding the situation.
So we were saying a little bit earlier that in that kind of initial shock phase, really, of what happened, it was about eating, sleeping, and moving. But then as things start to progress and some time starts to pass, there's different I guess, phases of what one needs, what one's body needs, what one's emotional body needs. I remember you said to me previously that there was certain avoidance tactics that started to come in that you almost default to that may initially have been helpful, but then after a while become a way of almost avoiding what's happening. Say a bit about some of those patterns.
Yeah, a friend of mine says when the house is on fire, you can't mow the lawn. Like in the early stages.
That's great.
Of shock and overwhelm. I mean, I laugh, you know, I'll get Facebook messages that it's someone's birthday and I'll go in to send them a message and I'll realize that they sent me a message the day Max died and I didn't see it. And it's almost 3 years later, but that's okay. Cause you can always do cleanup. You really need to prioritize. Sorry, my puppy's going a little bananas in the background. Early on, you know, how you allocate your resources and your energy. And then I do think that kind of distraction it's a way to kind of, you know, if you think about opening the soda bottle, you don't just open it because it might explode. You need to kind of slowly release it. And so it's not bad. I'm a workaholic. You know, I wrote my second book after my son was killed and people are like, oh, look at you, you're doing so much. And I'm like, no, it's like, I just chose that over alcohol and drugs. Like it just helped me. But I do think that, to your point, having distraction, like you just, you know, I used to train for marathons and it would be like run 12 miles, you know, run 2. Like you need to give yourself a break. There's a lot to be said for recovery and pausing and recalibrating. And so whatever that break is for you, be it, you know, watching a show, writing a book, you know, taking on a new challenge, getting a dog who's noisy, you know, you have lots of options. And I think as people who have this idea that you just have to keep going, you know, it's okay to, you can nap all day, you know, if you need to, like, just allow yourself, emotion kind of processes through at its own speed. And so sometimes it's okay to distract and not be in it. You just need to know at a certain point that you need to go back to it and close that loop because, you know, even though time passes, I don't think time heals all wounds. I think it changes things. And I think, you know, it's like peeling the layers off the onion. New things come up that you maybe couldn't deal with before, but now you're ready to.
It's having that wisdom, as you're saying, to recognize this is what I need right now. And then actually the breakthrough at one stage becomes the limitation at the next stage. It's like, okay, I was supporting myself by letting myself get lost in work and do this and do that. But actually I got a whole lot of stuff held in my body that I actually need to move and do something with. And I've survived this first 12 months, let's say. I now need to come at it from a different perspective. I think that that's really important, isn't it? To be able to identify what we need at different points.
No, I think that's exactly true. And it changes. Like there was some post in a group about someone who had a similar situation and people were throwing out things that I, you know, almost 3 years out, I'm just starting to wade into. I'm like, give yourself a break early on, like literally just eat, sleep and move. And then you can start to process. And it's interesting, you keep coming back to intuition. You know, Kelly Turner's Radical Remission, the book on people who survive cancer against all odds, so many of them turned into their intuition. And I think that's pretty natural for me, but I've noticed, you know, obviously with what's going on in the world, I don't know that everyone does that. They don't trust themselves or they don't trust their own history and body. And if people get nothing else out of this, I really would encourage them, like, if you know that, you know, when you take pharmaceutical drugs, you feel rotten, don't take them. Trust yourself. Yeah.
So let's come back to the vagus nerve pieces. So you mentioned earlier that you were using essential oils as a way of helping to reset and to calm what was happening. So let's actually take a little bit of a sidestep and just say a little bit about what essential oils are and how they can be of benefit. Because I think that's important to understand that, to then understand how you are working with them.
Yeah. So the first thing is, you know, think of the autonomic nervous system, sympathetic, you know, danger, response, fight or flight, parasympathetic, rest or digest. Vagus nerve is that on-off switch. And there are many ways to stimulate it. Like breathing is the easiest because the vagus nerve starts at the base of the skull, splits, is most accessible behind the earlobe on the mastoid bone on both sides. And then it innervates the throat, the heart, the lungs, you know, every organ of digestion and detoxification. So anywhere where it touches, you can stimulate it to kind of switch lanes, so to speak. So that's why breathing techniques like box breathing, Tatis Karazian used to talk about gagging yourself or gargling.
I don't think he likes the idea of gagging yourself, by the way.
I know. He has a lot to say.
He's like, that's not right, Jody. I know.
He's got a lot of opinions. But one thing that I learned, you know, because I have been playing with the vagus nerve, I do yoga. I always kind of knew that the reason you feel better in Shavasana than at the beginning of the class is because the breathing and the movements are activating the vagus nerve. So you're basically in parasympathetic in Shavasana. And I knew that this point behind the ear was a really powerful one. So oils are basically the natural, constituents of plants. Every plant has oil in it. You distill it. You put basically the plant in a big vat of boiling water. The steam rises. The water goes one way. The oil goes the other. So it's really kind of concentrated healing from plants. What's great about it is that the molecules are so small that they can basically pass the blood-brain barrier to get in and kind of calm the limbic system. Smell keeps us alive because we can smell food, we can smell water, we can smell predator odor. So it has a preferential access to the limbic system over the other four senses, which I'll go through the thalamus first. That's why we have that immediate scent response. So you can use smell, you know, in combination with breath to really kind of calm your nervous system, calm your limbic system. There's a lot of research on that. What's also fascinating to me, there was a researcher in 2012 out of New York who was basically implanting a pacemaker-like device behind this earlobe to stimulate the vagus nerve right there. And he had such tremendous success that the FDA approved this for epilepsy, migraines, and depression.
Wow.
And I had been playing with vagus nerve stimulation, but I was thinking, you know, you want to incite parasympathetic, let's use a calming oil like lavender or chamomile. But when I heard stimulate, I thought, oh, wait a minute. So many oils are stimulatory, meaning that if you were to put a drop on your arm, it might turn red. It might feel hot. Things like oregano, rosemary, thyme, peppermint, clove. So I started playing with stimulatory oils to stimulate the vagus nerve here. And it's a bit of chemistry, right? Because clove works the best. It has this constituent eugenol that is really powerful in detoxifying and stimulating, but the molecules are slightly bigger. So it took about 20 minutes to get through the skin. So that's why I blend oils. So if you combine it with a citrus oil, like lime, which has the smallest molecules, suddenly you get this super stimulatory blend that gets through the skin really quickly and acts almost like a gear shift or, you know, an acupuncture needle. It shifts you into parasympathetic and you can feel calm immediately. People who, the vagus nerve controls the whole digestive cascade. Mm. So people who have digestive issues, suddenly they'll hear their stomach gurgle. Or maybe they'll feel like they need a bowel movement. It works very quickly. And it just felt like very empowering because oils are affordable. You know, they're small. You can carry them in your purse. It felt like the world was so outside of my control. I had no control over the accident. I had no control over the legal stuff. I had no control over other people's reactions. The only thing I could actually control was my own reaction in that moment. You know, every single day when I go to the bank and someone in line would be like, oh, you know, which is pity, which is kind of a projection of shame, which affects you. And I could choose like, am I going to like fall apart because this person wants me to, like a circus monkey? Or am I going to say like, thank you, I appreciate that. I'm actually having a good day and smile, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's again, it really comes back to this piece around intuition, doesn't it? And going, what do I need in this moment? And I love what you're saying that, but the times where you almost have the least control over circumstances around you because they're so big and they're so many moving parts of what's happening, the one thing you can, not necessarily control, but you can influence is your own state and the way that you respond. But it takes a certain trust, doesn't it, to do that? That it's almost like, I'm not going to get caught in, but I've got to call this lawyer right now and I've got to deal with this. to almost go, I'm going to trust that to take care of itself right now, because I know that what I need to do is take care of me.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, for anyone who's ever been driving in traffic and someone cuts you off and for whatever reason, you're like, oh, I hope they get, you know, maybe they're in a hurry. I hope they get there safely. It doesn't affect you. You're like, that's okay. I got time. I like the song on the radio. I'm good. And then another day, the same exact situation can happen. And four letter words are flying out of your mouth. And for some reason, this is so upsetting to you. And the only variable that's different is you and how resilient you are in that moment and how open, how easily you can respond to change. Like, you know, something throws you off and you're still okay. And that's what I really realized is that the more I can make sure that I'm resilient, the more I'm sleeping through the night and like waking up refreshed, the more I'm moving and getting blood flow and getting exercise and, you know, nurturing myself with food and making sure that I digest, absorb, and assimilate it because I'm eating in a parasympathetic state. That was all within my realm of control. And that I could every day choose to influence, like, what is my capacity? What is my bandwidth? Because then, and, you know, speaking of kind of slowly chunking it, you know, like I was basically trying to turn the Titanic, and it's not like a quick turn. It's like every day you do a little bit, you know, whittle away challenges, the stress, the emotion, you know, and until you start to see progress. It's slow and steady wins the race. And so you need resilience to do that and to stick with it, because it's, you know, sometimes it feels like one step forward, seven steps back. And you just have to say, well, okay, I made that one step. Tomorrow, maybe I'll try again.
And how, because inevitably, when you deal with something as enormous as what you've been processing, one has days where they go, I just can't cope. I can't do this. It's too much. And it's almost the days that we most need to use these tools of self-care are the days we feel the least resourceful to do so.
Yeah.
What helped you navigate that? Or what would you say to someone that's struggling with that?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of made a commitment that every day, even when I didn't feel like getting up, I would get up and I would exercise. I would go to yoga or I'd go run, and then I'd take a shower. I would, you know, put on something that I thought was attractive. And if after I did that, I still needed to fall apart, I could totally crawl back in bed. But most days it's kind of this momentum. Once I got that done, I was like, okay, you know, I actually would keep a list, and I would every day just try to pick two things. Like if I would set myself up for success. If I do nothing else but make this phone call today, it's a win, you know? And then on the days that I could do those two things and I felt like I could pick two more, I would do two more. And I just kept, you know, it's like my mom used to say my dad would like slice his way through the cake. You know, he'd have just a sliver, then another sliver, then another sliver, and the cake's gone. You know, it was kind of like that. Like I would just give myself a manageable amount and try to celebrate every win.
That's awesome. I love that. You're setting it up so even if you do a tiny bit, you feel like you've won, and anything else you feel like is a bonus. So it's like you're setting it up to feel good about yourself rather than having this mountain that every day you feel like you're failing because you're not managing to do it.
Well, and the other nice thing is sometimes I would put things on the list, you know, like make dinner or go to the bank, like things that were kind of manageable that I knew I was going to do anyway. Because then I could check it off. My daughter actually showed me in the notes section of the phone, you can do little check boxes. There's something, I don't know why, but I get a lot of gratitude and accomplishment out of like checking a box.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
It's a good feeling when you feel like you've got through things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to come back a little bit more to the essential oils piece. For people which are new to essential oils, what are some of the starting points? You talked a little bit about how the mechanisms can work. Obviously, people are not ingesting, they're using on their skin or through smell. But how does someone get started with essential oils?
Honestly, it's so easy. I mean, just go, people are so concerned about quality. Honestly, I think you can smell when things are natural. An easy one to start with is lavender or orange, because they're affordable. And the easiest way to do it is literally just to smell the bottle under your nose. One of the things that I learned in researching the book is that your the different hemispheres of the brain do different things. And the right hemisphere is kind of known as the ruminating hemisphere. And so if you're having a panic attack or an anxiety attack, that's often an overactive right frontal lobe. And so the easiest way to do that is to balance the brain by stimulating the left frontal lobe. The easiest way to do that is to smell anything through your left nostril. I know a lot of people think like right brain, left body. And that's true, except for the nostrils go directly to either side. So literally take your right thumb, plug your right nostril, smell anything, orange, lavender, whatever smells good to you is a great choice. Like 3 to 5 breaths, you'll stimulate your left frontal lobe, balance the two hemispheres, and feel less anxious immediately.
That's really cool.
And it's not a big investment. And if it works, you'll keep doing it and try other ones. And if it's not for you, you know, that's you tried it.
And it goes back to the point you were making earlier that sometimes the most powerful thing one can do is shift their state. And that shift might only be a 4-5% shift, but then it's almost like connection feeds connection. So if you're really disconnected from yourself and you do something that calms things a bit, then you perhaps see things a bit more clearly, you calm a bit more, then perhaps you sleep a bit better that night and you wake up. So it's just trying to get these little shifts that help us move things in an easier direction, right?
That's exactly what it is. It's a small pivot with a big impact.
You said it better than me.
Oh.
So where can people get started? So you mentioned that people can get overly fixated on quality. What are some of your recommendations? You mentioned lavender. What are some of the other recommendations for people to start with?
I mean, there are a lot of them. You need to think about like how plants are grown. Like anyone that's ever had kind of an herb garden, it's really hard to kill peppermint and basil. And, you know, it's not like you need a ton of pesticides to get them to grow. So I wouldn't worry too much, you know, buy organic when you can. But yeah, just, you know, you can get started with lavender. It's great in an Epsom salt bath, 2 cups Epsom salt, 1 cup baking soda. You can add a little borax, you know, during cold and flu season, 2 or 3 drops of lavender, just mix it into the salt before you add water. If they want to learn more about my oils, we have a free book at boostthebrainbook.com/gift. They can grab a whole chapter on the vagus nerve and how to stimulate it. And it has some more information about oils and getting started. But I guess my biggest advice is step out of fear. Like it's very hard to do it wrong. It's very hard to make a mistake, you know, and you can feel the difference really quickly. So it's an easy thing to try. It's like dipping your toe in the water and seeing, is it cold or is it hot? You know, right away.
And in a sense, it can be a great way of shaping one's intuition, I guess, because you can see, well, how do different oils affect me? I think
people kind of
get very fixated on what's the right thing that I should do for this, rather than going, how does this affect me? What's my body telling me about how this
affects me? Well, and that's a good point too, because I heard somewhere someone said, if it smells bad, you need it. I see it as the opposite, you know, like you crave chocolate when you need magnesium, you crave meat when you need iron, you know what you need, you know, go ahead and smell. If something smells great to you, wonderful. That's a good choice for right now. And it could change. It could shift like frankincense. Sometimes it smells magical and sometimes it's not for me. You know, it's like, I don't wear this color every day. Every day you get to pick what's the best fit.
Unfortunately, I do tend to wear the same colors every day.
You do.
I get told off by the team at work. Oh, he's got another blue shirt on to film on today.
That was my dad's uniform. He wore navy shirts and khaki pants.
Jodi, for people that want to find out more about you and your work, what's the best way to do that?
You can visit vibrantblueoils.com or go ahead and go to boostthebrainbook.com/gift and get a free download just so you have more information. And then we can talk more.
Thank you, Jodi. It's always a pleasure. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.